This is the NOCM ESOL International Proficiency Level C2 listening examination. Please check that your name and other details are on your mark sheet. The invigilator will have explained how to fill in the mark sheet. Do not write on the examination paper. The listening examination will now begin. You will hear 10 sentences. Read the replies on your examination paper. You have 2 minutes to read the replies on your examination paper. Seconds remaining. Listen to the sentences. You will hear the sentences in full twice. Choose the best reply for the situation. Then you will have 2 minutes to check your answers. 1.
You don't look good. It looks like you're ready for a good rest.
2.
My radiator needs fixing. Can you help?
3.
Congratulations. You've passed your exam. You look really pleased.
4.
I don't know what to do about this new job.
5.
I'm bored.
6.
I don't want to take unnecessary risks.
7.
Did you know Mark was in hospital?
8.
Peter is under the weather today.
9.
My car has broken down, so I can't get to work.
10.
Why do you read all those reports? Now listen to the sentences again.
1.
You don't look good. It looks like you're ready for a good rest.
2.
My radiator needs fixing. Can you help?
3.
Congratulations, you've passed your exam. You look really pleased.
4.
I don't know what to do about this new job.
5.
I'm bored.
6.
I don't want to take unnecessary risks.
7.
Did you know Mark was in hospital?
8.
Peter is under the weather today.
9.
My car has broken down, so I can't get to work.
10.
Why do you read all those reports?
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers.
30 seconds remaining. You will hear two conversations. Read the questions and answers on your examination paper for both conversations. You have 2 minutes to read them. Seconds remaining. Listen to conversation one. You'll hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions, then you have 2 minutes to check the answers. We're going to talk to Dan, who was born in Ottawa, Canada. He studied psychology, political science and criminal sociology at university, but dropped out to act in 1980. He starred in the Blues Brothers film. He went on to make Trading Places, then wrote and starred in the 1984 hit Ghostbusters. He appears with Michael Douglas and Matt Damien in the film Beyond the Candelabras. Dan, what is your greatest fear?
23 and a half hour lockdown in the US federal penitentiary system.
What is your earliest memory?
The slap of the obstetrician's hand on my bottom.
What was your most embarrassing moment?
Having to remove my trousers in front of my grade 4 class and dry them on the radiator after I fell into a creek on my way to school.
What is your most treasured possession?
My 1932 Pierce Arrow V12 limousine.
Where would you like to live?
At my ancestral home in Canada. It's been in the family since 1826.
What would your superpower be?
X-ray vision.
What do you most dislike about your appearance?
The crack in my nose that makes it look like a human bum.
What is your most unappealing habit?
Talking out loud to myself.
What is your favourite smell?
Lilac.
To whom would you most like to say sorry and why?
My high school teachers, because of my obnoxiousness.
What does love feel like?
It tingles.
Which words or phrases do you most overuse?
If I might continue.
What is the worst job you've done?
Exterminating rodents.
What is the closest you've come to death?
falling through an industrial skylight to the floor 50 feet below.
How would you like to be remembered?
As a benefactor and a blues man.
What is the most important lesson life has taught you?
It's short, don't waste a second.
Tell us a joke.
A skeleton walks into a bar and says, "Give me a beer and a mop."
Now listen to the conversation again.
We're going to talk to Dan, who was born in Ottawa, Canada. He studied psychology, political science and criminal sociology at university, but dropped out to act in 1980. He starred in the Blues Brothers film. He went on to make Trading Places, then wrote and starred in the 1984 hit Ghostbusters. He appears with Michael Douglas and Matt Damien in the film Beyond the Candelabras.
Dan, what is your greatest fear?
23 and a half hour lockdown in the US federal penitentiary system.
What is your earliest memory?
The slap of the obstetrician's hand on my bottom.
What was your most embarrassing moment?
Having to remove my trousers in front of my grade 4 class and dry them on the radiator after I fell into a creek on my way to school.
What is your most treasured possession?
My 1932 Pierce Arrow V12 limousine.
Where would you like to live?
At my ancestral home in Canada. It's been in the family since 1826.
What would your superpower be?
X-ray vision.
What do you most dislike about your appearance?
The crack in my nose that makes it look like a human bum.
What is your most unappealing habit?
Talking out loud to myself.
What is your favourite smell?
Lilac.
To whom would you most like to say sorry and why?
My high school teachers, because of my obnoxiousness.
What does love feel like?
It tingles.
Which words or phrases do you most overuse?
If I might continue.
What is the worst job you've done?
Exterminating rodents.
What is the closest you've come to death?
Falling through an industrial skylight to the floor 50 feet below.
How would you like to be remembered?
As a benefactor and a blues man.
What is the most important lesson life has taught you?
It's short, don't waste a second.
Tell us a joke.
A skeleton walks into a bar and says, "Give me a beer and a mop."
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Thirty seconds remaining. Listen to conversation 2. You will hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions, then you have 2 minutes to check the answers. Mr. and Mrs. Porter, please come in.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson.
And how are you feeling today? Is your rash any better?
I'm afraid I'm not feeling any better. I don't think the medication is making any difference. Do you think it might be something more serious, measles or rubella?
Have you had either of them before?
Yes, I have. Both, I believe.
It can't be either of those, as you can not contact them any more than once.
You don't think it's the C word, do you?
Well, I have to confess, I'm a little baffled. We could continue with the routine test to see if they can shed any light on the situation. If not, we should consider a referral to the specialist.
What do you think might be the problem?
We need to see the outcomes of the tests to be sure. We'll need a blood sample first, but before we can start any treatment, we need to write to the hospital you were at previously to obtain your records.
Will my wife have to stay in hospital?
Yes, but only for 2 days.
You don't think it might be cancerous?
No, I don't, but we're going to do a biopsy, just to be on the safe side.
That's a load off my mind. Just one more question. Are any of the tests invasive? Will I need a general anaesthetic?
No. The biopsy is under local anaesthetic, so try not to worry. It's most likely a severe case of eczema, which has flared up.
That's reassuring. Thank you. When will I know the results?
You should hear from us within a fortnight.
OK.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Now listen to the conversation again. Mr. and Mrs. Porter, please come in.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson.
And how are you feeling today? Is your rash any better?
I'm afraid I'm not feeling any better. I don't think the medication is making any difference. Do you think it might be something more serious, measles or rubella?
Have you had either of them before?
Yes, I have. Both, I believe.
It can't be either of those, as you can not contact them any more than once.
You don't think it's the C word, do you?
Well, I have to confess, I'm a little baffled. We could continue with the routine test to see if they can shed any light on the situation. If not, we should consider a referral to the specialist.
What do you think might be the problem?
We need to see the outcomes of the tests to be sure. We'll need a blood sample first, but before we can start any treatment, we need to write to the hospital you were at previously to obtain your records.
Will my wife have to stay in hospital?
Yes, but only for 2 days.
You don't think it might be cancerous?
No, I don't, but we're going to do a biopsy, just to be on the safe side.
That's a load off my mind. Just one more question. Are any of the tests invasive? Will I need a general anaesthetic?
No. The biopsy is under local anaesthetic, so try not to worry. It's most likely a severe case of eczema, which has flared up.
That's reassuring. Thank you. When will I know the results?
You should hear from us within a fortnight.
OK. Thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. 30 seconds remaining. You will hear a debate and a discussion. Read the questions and answers on your examination paper for both the debate and the discussion. You have 2 minutes to read them. Thirty seconds remaining. Listen to the debate. You will hear the debate twice. Answer the questions. Then you have 2 minutes to check the answers. It's exactly a year since Julia Millerbrand was appointed as an MP, but any hopes of celebrating a quiet anniversary have been blown away by today's news. There are multiple headaches facing Mrs. Millerbrand, notably the Sunday Times allegations that retired top military brass are willing to lobby on behalf of defence contracts. Julia Millerbrand is with me now.
Good morning, Andrea.
This, as we were saying earlier in the paper review, is a classic sting operation, of course. Nonetheless, you've got a series of extremely eminent people who appear to be prepared to use events like remembrance celebrations, commemorations, private dinners and so on, to push the interests of defence companies. What's your view of this?
Well, first of all, I think the revelations are deeply damaging to the individuals concerned and their reputations. I would like to be clear that there is no way that retired officers influence the way military equipment is procured. I'm satisfied that the system we have is completely robust, but there is an issue. Firstly, about whether any rules have been broken, and clearly at least one, possibly more, of the individuals named in the Sunday Times piece were still under the terms of the 2-year restriction that applies after they have left the service. And secondly, I think we have to look at the level of access that we give retired officers to the Ministry of Defence and to serving officers. There are many, many reasons why it's sensible for the MOD to maintain contact with retired officers. They're often asked by people like yourself to comment on things that are going on in the defence area. But if they're abusing that access for commercial purposes, then we will have to tighten up or maybe even shut it down. So that's something we will now look at.
And how do you feel personally about knowing that your permanent secretary, for instance, was sitting next to somebody at dinner and part of the purpose was to collar him on a particular contract? You must feel betrayed.
Yeah, knowing my permanent secretary, I'm completely relaxed about it because he will be totally immune to that kind of approach. I think what we've seen on these kind of sting operations before is people rather bigging up their capabilities and what they can do. I hear a lot of bravado here.
Yes.
I mean, people that are talking about things that they've said or done at events, and I don't remember any of those things happening.
When George Osborne said at the government's security meeting that it just might be a good idea to bring the troops back now, was that a silly thing for him to say?
Well, anyone who knows the Chancellor's style will recognise this as a rhetorical posing of the counterfactual to the received wisdom. The Chancellor's style is quite properly to challenge received wisdom. Everybody is talking about the plan.
So you don't think he meant it seriously?
No, I think he was asking us to justify our current plan by putting it to us that there is an alternative. We could just come out now and we take that challenge.
Do you think there's any chance of bringing the bulk of the people that we've got home next year?
Well, what I've said is that following my last visit to Afghanistan, I detect a change in mood among the senior ISAF commanders. It will now be possible to have a significant reduction in force numbers by the end of 2014, after the next fighting season, and that is because of the evidence this year that as the US has withdrawn its surge, the Afghans have in fact stepped up to the plate and taken over those positions.
Can you give us any sense of numbers that might draw back?
Well, I would expect it to be significant, which means thousands, not hundreds.
Yes.
But I would not expect it to be the majority of our forces.
OK, so we're talking about something like 4,000, it sounds to me. That would be a...
Well, we will have of the 9,000 troops there at the beginning of 2013. By the end of 2014, we'll have virtually none.
So we can do the maths.
I would expect there to be a significant step at the end of 2013.
All right. Julie Miliband, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Now listen to the debate again. It's exactly a year since Julia Miliband was appointed as an MP, but any hopes of celebrating a quiet anniversary have been blown away by today's news. There are multiple headaches facing Mrs. Miliband, notably the Sunday Times allegations that retired top military brass are willing to lobby on behalf of defence contracts. Julia Miliband is with me now.
Good morning, Andrea.
This, as we were saying earlier in the paper review, is a classic sting operation, of course. Nonetheless, you've got a series of extremely eminent people who appear to be prepared to use events like remembrance celebrations, commemorations, private dinners and so on to push the interests of defence companies. What's your view of this?
Well, first of all, I think the revelations are deeply damaging to the individuals concerned and their reputations. I would like to be clear that there is no way that retired officers influence the way military equipment is procured. I'm satisfied that the system we have is completely robust, but there is an issue. Firstly, about whether any rules have been broken, and clearly at least one, possibly more, of the individuals named in the Sunday Times piece were still under the terms of the 2-year restriction that applies after they have left the service. And secondly, I think we have to look at the level of access that we give retired officers to the Ministry of Defence and to serving officers. There are many, many reasons why it's sensible for the MOD to maintain contact with retired officers. They're often asked by people like yourself to comment on things that are going on in the defence area. But if they're abusing that access for commercial purposes, then we will have to tighten up or maybe even shut it down. So that's something we will now look at.
And how do you feel personally about knowing that your permanent secretary, for instance, was sitting next to somebody at dinner and part of the purpose was to collar him on a particular contract. You must feel betrayed.
Yeah, knowing my permanent secretary, I'm completely relaxed about it, because he will be totally immune to that kind of approach. I think what we've seen on these kind of sting operations before is people rather bigging up their capabilities and what they can do. I hear a lot of bravado here.
Yes.
I mean, people that are talking about things that they've said or done at events, and I don't remember any of those things happening.
When George Osborne said at the government's security meeting that it just might be a good idea to bring the troops back now, was that a silly thing for him to say?
Well, anyone who knows the Chancellor's style will recognise this as a rhetorical posing of the counterfactual to the received wisdom. The Chancellor's style is quite properly to challenge received wisdom. Everybody is talking about the plan.
So you don't think he meant it seriously?
No, I think he was asking us to justify our current plan by putting it to us that there is an alternative. We could just come out now and we take that challenge.
Do you think there's any chance of bringing the bulk of the people that we've got home next year?
Well, what I've said is that following my last visit to Afghanistan, I detect a change in mood among the senior ISAF commanders. It will now be possible to have a significant reduction in force numbers by the end of 2014, after the next fighting season, and that is because of the evidence this year that as the US has withdrawn its surge, the Afghans have in fact stepped up to the plate and taken over those positions.
Can you give us any sense of numbers that might draw back?
Well, I would expect it to be significant, which means thousands, not hundreds.
Yes.
But I would not expect it to be the majority of our forces.
OK, so we're talking about something like 4,000, it sounds to me. That would be a...
We will have of the 9,000 troops there at the beginning of 2013. By the end of 2014, we'll have virtually none.
So we can do the maths.
I would expect there to be a significant step at the end of 2013.
All right. Julie Miliband, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Seconds remaining. Listen to the discussion. You will hear the discussion twice. Answer the questions, then you have 2 minutes to check the answers. Hello. Benefits from the state and the cost of them are hardly ever out of the news nowadays. Yesterday, Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg told the BBC that winter fuel payments, free bus passes for the over 60s in England, and free TV licences for those over 75 might be taken away after the next general election. From January, child benefit paid to every mother or father for every child since 1978 will be taken away for more than 1 million people who have an income over £60,000, and partly taken away if it exceeds £50,000. Changes and cuts to disability benefits have already happened. More are in the pipeline. From April, council tax benefits disappears to be reborn as council tax support, with a reduced budget and local discretion about how to pay it. And the so-called universal credit begins next year and will eventually replace six existing means-tested benefits for those who can't work, who are looking for work or in low-paid work. We still, of course, await the details of a new flat-rate state pension, which may or may not begin in a few years' time. And from Monday, if you make a mistake on a benefits form, you could be fined £50. Not for fraud, just for making a mistake. The Department for Work and Pension expects to fine more than 500,000 people each year and rake in £80 million over 3 years. Meanwhile, of course, millions of people rely on benefits or need to claim them as their lives change and wonder how to make sense of the very complex system that we have. Whatever your question about benefits now or how they might change, you can call Moneybox live on 03700 100 444. With me today to answer your question is Will Hadwen, who is Benefit Advisor with Working Families, and Jean French is Head of Advice and Information for Carers UK. Our first question is from Geraldine in Manchester. Geraldine, what's your question?
My question is DLA, presently being paid to my 15-year-old severely disabled grandson, will cease, I understand, next year. This benefit will then change to PIP. Currently, because he receives the highest level of DLA, he's entitled to mobility. What sort of changes can we expect? His condition isn't going to change, but what can we expect from the change system?
Okay, that's big changes to DLA, Disability Living Allowance. Just tell us, Jean French, how that's going to change.
Hello, Geraldine.
Hello.
What's going to happen is that DLA will remain in payment probably until your son is 16 years of age, okay? At that point, you'll need to make a claim for the personal independence payment and...
That's replacing DLA, isn't it?
That's right, but it's replacing DLA for adults, people over the age of 16 and claimants of up to the age of 65 at the moment. So after 65, attendance allowance will still exist as it does now. So Geraldine, your grandson is going to need to make a claim for the personal independence payment. If you're receiving child tax credits for him at the moment, you will stop receiving those on his behalf and he will be claiming what will then be universal credit as a means-tested benefit for him.
And that will probably be later this year. Will Hadwen, this is all very complicated. It's hard enough to understand the present system, never mind trying to speculate on the new system. Will this mean more money for Geraldine's grandson? I'm sure that's what you really want to know. Geraldine?
Well, potentially it could do, actually, because for most severely disabled children and young people, universal credit is in fact more generous. And what I think would apply in this case, although it is subject to the medical, is that your grandson would probably get the enhanced rate of a care component of the personal independence payment. And, as Jean says, ultimately he would be getting universal credit, although there might be an interim stage where he has to claim employment and support allowance before universal credit comes in. It depends when his 16th birthday is. It also depends, Geraldine, on whether he's still going to be in full-time, non-advanced education, because potentially you might have a choice of continuing to claim for him.
The intention is that he would remain in education at least until he is 19.
He would remain in education. All right. In that case, you have a slightly complicated choice, but one that's worth going over with a benefits advisor, which is about whether you continue to claim child tax credit and child benefit for him, or whether he claims it in his own right.
Right. We don't actually receive any tax benefit. The only benefit he receives is his DLA.
Okay. And someone's getting child benefit for him, presumably?
Yes. Which she will lose in January because of her earnings. What I was really interested in is the link, or whether there is a link to mobility, because presently, receiving the highest level, he does actually have access to a mobility vehicle. Will that change?
Well, the answer is we don't know for certain. But what the DWP have said is that they are aware of DLA mobility component is currently linked to mobility, and we expect that the mobility component of the PIP will be linked in a similar way. But we don't have the details of that yet, I'm afraid.
Income-based employment support allowance, I think Susan was going to say. But we have lost the line to Manchester. Well, that's something we might be pursuing on Moneybox, but I'm afraid that will all we have time for. My thanks to Will Hadwell from Working Families and Jean French of Careers UK. And thanks for all your calls and emails. Now listen to the discussion again. Hello. Benefits from the state and the cost of them are hardly ever out of the news nowadays. Yesterday, Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg told the BBC that winter fuel payments, free bus passes for the over 60s in England, and free TV licences for those over 75 might be taken away after the next general election. From January, child benefit paid to every mother or father for every child since 1978 will be taken away for more than 1 million people who have an income over £60,000, and partly taken away if it exceeds £50,000. Changes and cuts to disability benefits have already happened. More are in the pipeline. From April, council tax benefits disappears to be reborn as council tax support, with a reduced budget and local discretion about how to pay it. And the so-called universal credit begins next year and will eventually replace six existing means-tested benefits for those who can't work, who are looking for work, or in low-paid work. We still, of course, await the details of a new flat-rate state pension, which may or may not begin in a few years' time. And from Monday, if you make a mistake on a benefits form, you could be fined £50. Not for fraud, just for making a mistake. The Department for Work and Pension expects to fine more than 500,000 people each year and rake in £80 million over 3 years. Meanwhile, of course, millions of people rely on benefits or need to claim them as their lives change and wonder how to make sense of the very complex system that we have. Whatever your question about benefits, now or how they might change, you can call Moneybox live on 03700 100444. With me today to answer your question is Will Hadwen, who is Benefit Advisor with Working Families, and Jean French is Head of Advice and Information for Carers UK. Our first question is from Geraldine in Manchester. Geraldine, what's your question?
My question is DLA, presently being paid to my 15-year-old severely disabled grandson, will cease, I understand, next year. This benefit will then change to PIP, currently, because he receives the highest level of DLA. He's entitled to mobility. What sort of changes can we expect? His condition isn't going to change, but what can we expect from the change system?
Okay, that's big changes to DLA, Disability Living Allowance. Just tell us, Jean French, how that's going to change.
Hello, Geraldine.
Hello.
What's going to happen is that DLA will remain in payment probably until your son is 16 years of age, okay? At that point, you'll need to make a claim for the personal independence payment and...
That's replacing DLA, isn't it?
That's right, but it's replacing DLA for adults, people over the age of 16 and claimants of up to the age of 65 at the moment. So after 65, attendance allowance will still exist as it does now. So Geraldine, your grandson is going to need to make a claim for the personal independence payment. If you're receiving child tax credits for him at the moment, you will stop receiving those on his behalf and he will be claiming what will then be universal credit as a means-tested benefit for him.
And that will probably be later this year. Well, Hedwyn, this is all very complicated. It's hard enough to understand the present system, never mind trying to speculate on the new system. Will this mean more money for Geraldine's grandson? I'm sure that's what you really want to know. Geraldine?
Well, potentially it could do, actually, because for most severely disabled children and young people, universal credit is in fact more generous. And what I think would apply in this case, although it is subject to the medical, is that your grandson would probably get the enhanced rate of a care component of the personal independence payment. And, as Jean says, ultimately he would be getting universal credit, although there might be an interim stage where he has to claim employment and support allowance before universal credit comes in. It depends when his 16th birthday is. It also depends, Geraldine, on whether he's still going to be in full-time, non-advanced education, because potentially you might have a choice of continuing to claim for him.
The intention is that he would remain in education at least until he is 19.
He would remain in education. All right. In that case, you have a slightly complicated choice, but one that's worth going over with a benefits advisor, which is about whether you continue to claim child tax credit and child benefit for him, or whether he claims it in his own right.
Right. We don't actually receive any tax benefit. The only benefit he receives is his DLA.
Okay. And someone's getting child benefit for him, presumably?
Yes, which she will lose in January because of her earnings. What I was really interested in is the link, or whether there is a link to mobility, because presently, receiving the highest level, he does actually have access to a mobility vehicle. Will that change?
Well, the answer is we don't know for certain. But what the DWP have said is that they are aware of DLA mobility component is currently linked to mobility, and we expect that the mobility component of the PIP will be linked in a similar way. But we don't have the details of that yet, I'm afraid.
Income-based employment support allowance, I think Susan was going to say. But we have lost the line to Manchester. Well, that's something we might be pursuing on Moneybox. But I'm afraid that will all we have time for. My thanks to Will Hadwell from Working Families and Jean French of Careers UK. And thanks for all your calls and emails. Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. 30 seconds remaining. This is the end of the listening examination. Please check your mark sheet is completed correctly. Put your pens down.